Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Friday to you. Brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac Jaguars today on the air live from Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony, all here with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony, you're usually the guy who puts together most of the opens for the show. I think Tyler's done a few, but you originally, when we started the show, put together just a hodgepodge of opens with classic highlights from the Jags.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get, based on yesterday's conversation, one for next week that features all five of Willie Jackson's two-point conversion catches that he scored in his career?
I'd have to work pretty hard to find all those.
Good for the third highest total in league history, shockingly enough. Let's say hello to David Garrard. How are you this morning?
I am great. Good to be here.
This guy, semi-geek, okay? Semi-only. Comes in with a shirt representing the Flash because he's big on the superhero stuff. So he goes, look, I've got my Avengers shirt on today. I'm like, what universe are you living in? The Flash is in the Avengers. I know. It's the spirit of the Avengers.
I was in the realm, you know, just wanted to say it was not a normal guy's shirt.
It's a comic book. It's a superhero shirt. Right.
I mean, geez.
We got it.
We're
a little nerdish here when it comes to superheroes.
We don't all attend Comic-Con. I'm sorry.
I'd love to. Do you have dates and times?
Except Marvel Studios said they're not going to Comic-Con anymore. They're not doing that anymore.
They don't need to.
I know.
Apparently.
Which kind of stinks.
It does kind of stink.
It would be a reason I'd go to Comic-Con.
Right. Why just have their own event.
I guess
they do.
There's still going to be plenty of Star Wars people doing cosplay and all that stuff.
Marvel has its own event. Star Wars just had their own event like a couple weeks ago. So, yeah.
I don't know I was going to go cosplay. Not that anyone wants to see me dress up as a costumed anything, but.
Oh, no.
Any suggestions for what I might go as? Dave? See, I'd say Luke Cage right here because he's ripped. He's Alistair. I mean, he could pull that off, I think.
I would think that you need to figure out some way to do a Thing costume. You need to
for
be
me?
The Thing. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
like Big Bird or somebody.
Or Big Bird, for that matter.
He was a part of the Avengers.
Why don't
he?
You go retire again? All right. David Garrard. Ooh, you pop in last week. And maybe it's your fault, man. Everything was going so well in Jacksonville until I saw you on Friday. Unbelievable. Great time at the Players last
great time.
Week. By the way, I should have mentioned this early in the week. The PGA Tour, I wasn't in Monday because of the traffic situation, but the PGA Tour does such a tremendous job putting that event on, and the access they give us year after year is better and better. Chris Reimer, particularly, big friend of the station, is absolutely incredible for the work that he does during that event and really year-round. So big thanks to those guys. But it was good to see you out there with some of the fam out there on Friday, having a good time.
We were, and the crowd was awesome. You know, I got a lot of fans that were taking pictures with me and just shaking my hand as I was passing through the crowds. But they had a lot of people out there, and it was really cool to see. It was a great event, and what a finish.
Maybe the best players of all time
yeah.
as it went down. And there you are. We're up in the benefactor tent on Friday doing our show, and I've got to leave early. And I'm truly standing up, taking my headset off. I mean, I'm at that stage, exit stage left, and Dave goes, hang on a second. Oh, by the way, I'm officially retiring from the National Football League and will retire as a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So just to clear that up, because I didn't have much time with you after that, will you sign the ceremonial one-day contract, that kind of thing? Is that going to happen?
Yeah, hopefully at some point. You know, they've filled all the roster spots right now, and so you have to kind of wait for that to open up. So at some point it will happen. I know they want to do some kind of media thing at least until that happens to, you know, just to have me be here and be a part of it and have the Jaguars affiliated with it. So, you know, I didn't know that you were going to be leaving and walking out. I was trying to make this happen for you guys on your radio station and the show and everything. And so I said, you know what, let's just go ahead and do it anyway.
Let's make sure.
Great theater.
Apparently Dempsey can't stick around. So
he doesn't care.
Now, one question I got a lot from people on Twitter was, didn't Dave retire a little while ago? What do you mean he's retiring from the National Football League? What has it been like, I mean, in terms of it's funny, you said after you told your agent the other day, he said, hey, maybe you want to hang on, look at the Patriots situation, who knows, maybe they'll call you. Agents are always out there looking for that next opportunity, but I'm sure you reached a point, I'm assuming, where it was just, you knew it was time to be done with it. You didn't want to chase those last few, you know, waiting for the call that may never come.
Yeah, well, after I left the Jets the second time, so I went through the rest of the season, about 10 games, and they didn't bring me back. Nobody brought me in that following offseason, which was not this past one, but the one last year. I stuck around for a year, still trying to stay in shape, still throwing the ball, that kind of stuff, and then basically went through last year. Nobody picked me up. There was a ton of quarterback situations that I felt like, okay, there's going to be a chance here at some point in time, and nothing happened, so I said, you know what? It's not going to happen for me. So I still stuck around and, you know, just still try to stay as good a shape as possible. But then got to this offseason and I still had people in the out in the streets asking me, you know, where am I at now? What am I doing? That kind of stuff. And my wife is definitely ready for me to just, you know, be done. And so we don't have to travel around to different cities to try to play anymore and move the kids around. So I said, let me just go ahead and make it official today. I'm going to go see these guys this week. So didn't know that you would be taking off.
It's okay.
Know,
the it's last all right. Minute, we appreciate you spreading the news on this show. That was very nice of you to do that.
Yeah, so I just wanted to go ahead and make it official, I guess, you know, just by putting it out there in the airwaves and, you know, the Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
You hooked on with teams after this, but how much of the last couple of years waiting for that call had to do with the fact that in Miami you were going to be the starting quarterback? And that was Ryan Tannehill's rookie season. You got hurt. You weren't going to be ready to start the season. And they said, rather than go to, like, the third guy in the depth chart, let's just put the rookie in there. And once you do that, you don't want to look back. And it's like you were this close to opening the season as the Miami Dolphins starting quarterback. And then, you know, through no fault of yours or their own, it just didn't happen for you. Did that play in the back of your mind, like, boy, I just want that one more chance to prove because I felt like I was on the brink of writing that last chapter?
Yeah, you know, just when I left the Jaguars and in the fashion that I left, you know, being let go the Tuesday afternoon after the luncheon, I went through that season, didn't get picked up. But halfway through the season, I found out that I had a herniated disc in my back, had to have surgery for it. So that pretty much shut me down anyway. But then I rehabbed back from that, got back super healthy, felt good going into Miami. And felt good going all the way up to training camp. And then, you know, as time is wearing on, my knee is starting to swell more and more. And then finally I got to the point where I couldn't do anything and had to have it scoped. And so that it was just terrible timing. And then the same kind of situation happens with them. And I didn't just do the luncheon as a starter, but it's Tuesday. And we have our first practice the next day to get ready for that, you know, opening game. And I know that I'm not going to be the starter, but I'm still feeling pretty good about staying on the team. And so they let me go that day. And so at that point in time, I had started to start training again with my knee after surgery. I did not let my knee heal long enough. So they kind of had me out there earlier than I should have been. And then in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, well, I need to keep training to get picked up by somebody else. And I should have been letting it heal. I should have been taking my time to let it rest. And I didn't. So I rushed myself kind of back into it. Didn't get picked up that year, but the following offseason, I do get picked up by the Jets. My knee is still swelling. It's still bad, but I do enough to go out there and show them that I can still move. But the whole time before we even start OTAs, I mean, I'm the last guy in the training room. Every damn first guy in, last guy out, just because my knee will not stop swelling. I get it, you know, a lot of the swelling out, but as soon as I go back out and run around on it again, it just keeps coming back. And so I was getting frustrated. It was bothering me to the point that I just felt like, you know what, there's no need to kill my knee to try to, you know, squeeze a couple more seasons in. And so I just said, you know what, I got to just be done with it. It's just too much. So then I just took the whole summer off, just relaxing, letting everything heal up. Felt good going into September and just said, you know what?
It's hard, man.
I should not be sitting on the couch right now because my knee feels good. I've been out doing a little bit of training and everything, and it felt great. So when I went back to the Jets, I said, you know what? Let me call them up and see if they still want a old guy. And they said, come on. That was basically when what's the quarterback that hurt himself in the preseason game? Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt himself in the preseason game, didn't come back from his shoulder, and they said, well, we've got to let him go on IR and bring somebody else in. At that same time, I said, you know, let me just give him a call, and then it worked out. But then the next offseason, you know, or basically this past offseason, my other knee starts hurting, and it swells up, and I can't move it around. So there's just no need to continue to put my body through this. You know, I had a good run, and I'm happy to just, you know, walk away and join you guys a little bit more often.
Hey, we're happy to have you. And, you know, the thing with letting it rest in Miami, you know, letting the knee fully heal, it's got to be a tough position because you're not a guy that's got a track record with that team at that point. And you're trying to earn your spot, and you're balancing, well, if I let it rest, I'm not going to get the reps to show them that I can play to the level that they want, so the opportunity is not going to be there to seize that opportunity. You put yourself in a position where you further hurt your knee.
Yep.
It's almost like a catch-22. There's no way around it.
It is, because you're pressed as a player to speed your recovery back, especially when timing is terrible. You know, if it was April, I would have had time to let it rest and heal properly, but something that takes 6 to 9 weeks, I only had really 4 weeks to show that I could be healthy enough to give them an opportunity to keep me on the roster. And so you do everything possible to get yourself back and healthy, but then when they let you go, you've already kind of done the damage moving forward. And so nobody else was going to bring me in within a few weeks of the season starting. And so, but I still had to continue to get myself healthy and train and all those things in case somebody did want to bring me back. And then when nobody brought me back after all those months of training and setting my knee up to be worse, I had to go back in and get it cleaned out again because of that. And so it just kept setting myself back. And like I said, this, you know, just a month ago, I had to go get my other knee cleaned out. So it's just, my body is telling me it's time anyway. So.
Well, now you're an entrepreneur with Retro Yes. Fitness, so you're on to the next stage.
Absolutely.
And next phase of your life. David Garrard here with us. And you, like everybody else, so excited for Dante Fowler Jr. and that draft class coming in. So we'll get your reaction to when you heard the news a week ago today. Not even a full week has gone by, or a few hours short of that, when Dante Fowler unfortunately got hurt on the practice field. We'll talk about that today. A question of the day deals with Roger Goodell, who, as the NFL has announced, he will hear the appeal of Tom Brady through the NFLPA of his 4-game suspension. And we'll talk about the impact of that, what that means for the Patriots, what that means for the league. But today's question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships, just simply asks you as a listener, what kind of job do you think Roger Goodell has done? On a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a commissioner is he for the National Football League? And you can put the number and then give a quick explanation of why you feel that way. You can share your thoughts at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, at 1010XL, Fat Tony on Twitter. Also, the Jaguars Today Facebook page. Also, 641-1010, the call-in line, which also doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. So you can share your thoughts in a variety of ways if you can't make it through on the phones this morning. We'll get to all that and a lot more coming up on a Friday, brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. See, Dave, when I was about 1 year old, back in December 1969, I'm always popping a little fresh BB King. The thrill is gone. So I'm well-versed in this right here. Actually, I'm not, but I am old enough that it could have happened just that way. BB King, 89 years young. Was it today he went or yesterday? This morning?
He passed this morning.
All right, rest in peace, BB King, who I heard the guys on the drill talking about. I know who B.B. King is, obviously. I know, you know, huge name in music. But according to them, he went out with Oprah money. He saved his money.
Man, that's pretty good.
Multi-billionaire.
And I'm sure 9 years later, my parents were still listening to this song.
When you were in your career.
Yeah.
I listen to this stuff all the time. I love the blues. That old blues.
You listen to B.B. King a lot?
Yeah.
Do you?
I do.
Tony's just very...
He's well
cultured.
Well,
he's got
cultured.
Soul. He's deeper than us.
He is.
That's what he is.
Clearly
deeper than us. All right, Dave. The thrill is gone in terms of Dante Fowler Jr.'s rookie season. I know you were so excited about it. It wasn't the guy. We didn't all agree that we would have picked him at that spot, but clearly he was in the conversation among the best players in the draft, best non-quarterbacks in the draft. And so the Jags get him. We're all excited last Friday when I see the draft with, combined with free agency. One of the best off seasons the Jags have had in a while. And, you know, full steam ahead. And then an hour into his first minicamp, he goes down. First of all, minicamps this early in the draft process, when you got guys that are they're working out, they have all their private workouts with teams, they train for the combine, they do all this stuff, and then guys like Fowler get on the circuit where they're going to the draft, they're on SportsCenter, they're doing all these things, and you throw them out there immediately a week after the draft into a rookie minicamp. Is it too soon? Is it okay?
It doesn't matter. He's a football player. You know, he's ready to go out there whenever. I will say that they are training for the combine and all those things. They're not really doing as many football drill-specific type things. They are doing some, but nothing really compares to actually being out there at practice with guys pushing on you, with coaches yelling, with all the different things that happen at practice, at a real NFL practice. And it's not even a real NFL practice, you know, because you don't have pads on, just got a helmet on. So you're just running around. And if you look at his injury, there's nothing to it that said they were being too physical. There was too much going on. I mean, you're a defensive end, so you're going to rush, and a tackle is going to put his hands on you to try to keep you away. And that's it. He's not plowing into you. He's not trying to drive block you into the ground. He's just working on his craft like you're working on your craft. And it's just an unfortunate thing. You can try to get the league to go back and look at things and see if they can adjust it here and there. You're still going to get guys hurt. It doesn't matter. Guys are going to get a very physical sport, even when you just have helmets on. It's still a physical sport. So to think things need to change or, you know, they're too early, it doesn't matter. We're football players, and that's what we do.
You look at that drill that he's running. To me, you can speak to this better than I can, but – you know the big blocking dummies that they put out there? Defensive ends routinely run around and they come in and stripping quarterbacks and things like that. Had it been that, he would have been doing the same thing. He would have been getting low, trying to get as low as he can, turn the corner. He got his leg just in a bad position,
and
it's one of those fluky things. Never had a leg injury, never had any issues, never missed a game at Florida, but certainly his last injury of consequence was separated shoulder in high school when he played running back. So, you know, he was a guy who, in terms of those issues, wasn't a red flag in the least.
No, I mean, just think about the number of injuries in the past where guys are making a cut trying to, you know, juke a guy, and they go down, and you're like, oh, my God, what happened? It's just those kind of a fluke injury, and it's going to happen. It's just putting your foot down at the right time and your knee being in the right position, you know, I say wrong position for these things to happen, and they're unfortunately always going to happen.
No, they're going to happen. And look, in Denver, the other torn ACL this weekend at a rookie minicamp was a guy doing a one-on-one special teams drill.
Yeah,
I mean, they're going to happen with how tightly wound these athletes are. They step a little bit wrong. These things, every now and then, they're unfortunate, but it's going to happen in the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been doing the same bag drills like you're saying over there after practice by himself, just trying to work on things, and he could have did it there. And what are you going to say? Well, they're not supposed to stay after and you know, do things on their own. They need to be always watched and, you know, have somebody over top of them making sure they do things properly. You're just not going to be able to protect everybody. That's just the sport.
And this is, look, we talk about no contact in these mini camps. There's always going to be some degree of contact when big bodies are occupying closely, you know, held spaces. But it's not – we're out there. And, yes, there's a little bit of contact, but it's not like there's full-blown – it's not blocking. It's certainly not pushing guys to the ground. You hear the ball goes to the ground. You hear the coaches yelling, stay up, stay up. They don't want guys diving out there. It's not – you know, if you're free and clear, pick up the ball, simulate running it back the other way. But they're well aware of – the fact that we're just trying to get these guys acclimated to the system. How else are you going to do that? You know, you go back again. Everyone talks about how tough it was back in the day, but it clearly the one thing the CBA that the players earned maybe more than any other concession is the lack of physical practice, particularly in the off season. You can't hit nearly as much during the season anymore. And some people say it's even swung too far to the extreme. So these kind of situations, again, you just, you know, it's unfortunate bad luck of the draw for Dante Fowler Jr. You got to love the way he handled it, his attitude. He's going to be back. I got to love the way the Jags handled it, getting that contract done within days and not messing around, giving him the exact deal they promised he was going to get. Not that you expected anything different. They're supposed to negotiate in good faith, but just to have it done and be done and put that out there like, hey, you get drafted, you come to this team, you're going to get taken care of.
Yeah, and to have changed it or done anything any different would have been just a bad precedence. You know, people would have thought, there's no way I want to get picked up by this team. I don't want to be a free agent for this team if they're going to treat their players that way. Because, you know, if he had already been signed, then they would have been held accountable for his contract. But since he hadn't signed, but being a rookie, I mean, there's nothing he can do, you know. So what do you do, give him a terrible deal? And just because he got injured, I mean, he could have signed, and then the day later, you know, things would have happened like that. So
he got injured doing things the right way.
Yeah,
he got injured showing
he
up.
He wasn't
for
playing basketball.
Camp,
he right. wasn't, you know,
right.
out doing something
there,
crazy.
Yeah, participating, you know? For you, ask, doing what you're asking.
Exactly. So that was definitely great by the Jags, and not to draw it out or anything like that, but to make it happen quick.
What about the rest of the draft class? What excited you? Is T.J. Yeldon the guy that leaps to mind? Clearly the next pick, and his role is expected to be a big one in his rookie year.
Absolutely. T.J. and Rashard Greene, I mean, just being an offensive player for myself, I just think these are two great picks. And, you know, listening to the guys earlier, just talking about how some guy said that he's going to be like the 40th best, you know, rookie, or, you know, there's no way that would happen. We're going to be a run heavy offense, and as long as he's not injured, I really believe that he's going to get a ton of touches and make a lot of things happen. You know, I think he's going to get a lot of catches. I think Blake will get him the ball that way too. And so Rashard Greene and TJ are two guys that I would see making a lot of plays this year. You know, they're going to be rookies, so they're going to have their rookie mistakes, those kind of things. But the way Rashard has always carried himself, the way he played in college, I would think as long as he gets the scheme down, he's going to go out there and make a lot of things happen. Because I'm not going to say it's easier to play the slot position, but you can get open more often playing the slot position. You're not nearly as far away from the quarterback, so you're usually going to get safeties and linebackers, and you're usually running around in zones there. So, you know, just look at Wes Welker and those kind of guys. You know, they're always getting open because they're not playing, a lot of times, the number one defense back out there. So I see him getting, you know, a lot of catches. As long as he can get the scheme down and, you know, get his nerves in check, you know, being a rookie.
He was definitely nervous, and he admitted that on Friday.
Yeah, and you're – I mean, you're going to be. It's you know, I was nervous. Everybody that steps out in that field that has to handle the ball – you're going to be nervous, because wherever the ball is, I mean, all eyes are
right on
you. If you're a defensive end or a right guard or even a guy in the secondary, you're not going to notice nearly as much because the ball is not in your hands. And so he knows that when I have an opportunity, everybody's going to be watching me. They're going to be critiquing everything that I do. And so and you're in the big leagues now. You know, everybody wants to see, oh, well, is he going to be worth that pick? You know, is he going to be the guy that carries us into the future? All that kind of stuff is going through their heads as young rookie players. And so I would expect them to be nervous now. They're going to continue to get better as OTAs go on. And then in training camp, those first few days, they're going to be nervous again, you know.
There was a pretty good debate going into the draft with the third pick. You basically know who's going to be there. You had a good feeling the quarterbacks are coming off 1-2. Maybe Leonard Williams would go to Tennessee. As it turned out, they had the choice of any position player, and a lot of people prior to the draft were advocating for Amari Cooper, and their point was offense is where this team really struggled last year, putting points on the board. So my question to you as a quarterback, you got Blake Bortles, you're trying to develop him, okay, and give him the best chance to succeed. You sign Julius Thomas in the offseason. That's a big plus. You add Jeremy Parnell, who comes in as what you feel is a big upgrade at right tackle. You sign Stefan Wisniewski, who, when he's been healthy, and as he has been for most of his career, he's dealing with a labrum recovery right now. He's started 61 out of a possible 61 games that he was active for in Oakland. He looks at himself as a starter. Good chance you've got a new starting center. Then you draft A.J. Cann. in the third round, who, if nothing else, is going to push Zane Beatles to perform better, create some more competition there. You also throw Austin Pastor in the mix to push some of these guys on the interior because he has some versatility. And, you know, and a lot of people thought Cann was a top 40 player. So you've potentially upgraded three starting spots, but at least one for sure, likely two. Added Julius Thomas, added what you figure to be your feature running back, and drafted Rashad Green in round five, and we'll see what he gets. You know, I'm not expecting big things as a rookie, but my question, after a long preamble, have they done enough to give Blake the weapons around him to mature into what they need him to be this year?
Well, it's really going to depend on those the young receivers. You know, are they going to continue to grow and get better? Are they going to be able to step up and make those plays and not make some of the plays like Hearns was making last year where he was dropping just way too many balls when he would be wide open, you know? But then he would make some great plays as well. You don't want that inconsistency. So it's really going to be up to them. They have the tight end. They have now what you feel like is the back in the backfield. You still have Mercedes who's going to help as well. But it's really going to come down to the young wide receivers. You would feel like they have upgraded the offensive line, and that's only going to tell when, you know, real bullets are flying out there. And then is Blake going to be able to take that next step as well? You know, he has to be able to be more consistent, to be able to get the ball out of his hands consistently with good throws. You know, he showed some great flashes, great moments, definitely better than what we've seen in the last few years. But he has to take another step up. He has to be able to have those game-winning drives. You know, when first we got to be within the game to have those game-winning drives, you know, but then go down and execute and win the games at the end of the game because he did it. You know, of course he needs help from those guys, but you can tell that he orchestrated the drive and made things happen. So there's going to be a number of things that really tell whether or not they've done enough, but it's going to be from all the guys. It's not just one group here and there. It's all of them.
Excited as you were when we talked last week about the draft class and the way everything went, would you, and obviously you're coming from a quarterback's perspective, but would you have wanted them to have drafted Amari Cooper?
Well, I mean, I definitely like Amari Cooper. I would have loved to seen Amari Cooper's name come across it, but I'm a big proponent, too, of we need somebody to get after the quarterback. You know, if you can get off the field, if you can have somebody over there coming off the edge that puts that kind of fear in the other quarterback, the opposing quarterback's mind, then your defense is going to make even more plays, and you're going to get off the field more often. You know, you're going to have a conversion rate of getting off the field on third down is going to be a whole lot higher than it has been in the past. So that's what you want. So I was, if it wasn't Amari Cooper, that's pretty much him, or Leonard Williams is who I, you know, was expecting them to get and who I wanted them to get. So I was happy with it, you know, because a defensive end, if you have a really, really good one, it's going to cause a lot of problems for a lot of years.
As Tony and I have talked about, and pretty much everybody around here has, we think they have enough this year. It's not like they won't be competitive up front. They were pretty good last year. Mm-hmm. They trade the older legs of Red Bryant for the younger legs of Jared Odrick. Obviously, they have to get Cedric Marks back to full health, but they have enough potential Leo types to piece it together for this year. Dante Feller would have helped for sure. His biggest impact may have come starting next year and beyond. So you wonder, is he going to be able to hit the ground running next year? Certainly he's got plenty of time to rehab. It'll have about 16 months by the time the 2016 season starts. But that's a chapter to be written down the road.
The best thing about being a defensive end is you don't have to handle the ball. It's just go get the quarterback.
This is true.
So his learning curve is, you know, a whole lot less than if you're playing quarterback or if you're trying to be a receiver and getting open and catching the ball and making plays. You know, just pin your ears back. Go get the quarterback.
Go get him. Go hunt, big guy. All right. David Garrard is here with us. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010, both for the phone line and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Question of the day, we asked you on a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a commissioner do you feel Roger Goodell has been for the National Football League? And share your thoughts as to why, both on Twitter and Facebook as well. And you can also call and text your responses to that as well. We'll get into the Deflategate scenarios with David Garrard next from a quarterback perspective, including the fact that Roger Goodell and the league have announced that he, as is collectively bargained, will hear the appeal of Tom Brady, much to the dismay of the New England Patriots, it appears. We'll get into that and more coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, David Garrard here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you Jaguars Today every Friday afternoon, or morning, I guess is the case, maybe. It depends on when you listen, right? You may be listening on a podcast.
Sure.
Some kind of replay on demand on 1010XL.com. You don't know.
You don't know.
What's happening?
It could be 2018. Hello, 2018.
Regardless, right? You're listening on some audio archive. Some dude in 2018 right now is listening to this right now, Tony. It's like, this is amazing. How did they know? Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac has served as the preferred Cadillac dealer in Northeast Florida. They've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees, an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any Cadillac model. They'll do it all for you, including guaranteeing the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac, one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to claudenolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111. That's 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and the QB, David Garrard, here with us. Speaking of being the QB, we had the center, the former center of the Jaguars, Dave Wydell, call us. It was his birthday yesterday, by the way. He's an old dude. He's older than me, but not by a whole lot. So I'll be quiet now. He said Dave is a guy who handled the ball on every snap as a center. Definitely makes a difference. And just from that simple aspect, bad weather, cold weather, and Dave's a huge guy. I mean, huge guy, right? Doesn't have any problem getting his fingers around the football, but even he said, I would notice a difference if you had a slightly underinflated ball. It's definitely advantageous. Obviously, the Patriots play in bad weather. We've talked about this a little bit before, but your point of view as a quarterback, can a little bit less air pressure significantly impact your ability to throw the football?
Absolutely. I mean, if I handed you a normal size pumped inflated ball, you would think, man, how do you guys throw this rock? Because it is very hard. But then if I handed you one that I took out whatever PSI that they took out of it, you would be able to squeeze your fingers into the ball and be able to handle it that much better. It would change your mind about being able to have a inflated ball. You would absolutely want your ball to have less air in it. And so that helps out the quarterback, that helps out the receiver, that helps out whoever is handling the ball, because you can dig your fingers down into it a little bit more and cause less fumbles for you, especially at the quarterback position, because you get hit often and a lot of times you don't see that hit coming. But if you can just squeeze down into that ball a little bit more, now that ball doesn't come out. Also throwing the ball as a quarterback, just think about having softball and a baseball. Which one are you going to be able to throw harder, faster, longer, be more accurate? I think is the baseball, because it's smaller. You can get your hand around it better. Same thing with a football. If it has less air in it, you're just going to be able to squeeze it that much more. And so as a quarterback, I mean, if you can get less air in a ball, that's great. Now there gets to a point where, you know, not enough air in the ball makes the ball come out worse for you.
Yeah, you're not going to have the aerodynamics.
Exactly.
Right?
So, but there's that little gray area where you can take enough out to really enhance and improve your quarterbacking ability.
I get that the NFL doesn't want half inflated footballs, but in all seriousness, I don't know why it's such a hard and fast rule. Honestly, if you got a quarterback with a little bit smaller hands, as long as you're playing with that football and the other team can prepare theirs the way you want, I really don't care that there is a rule. There doesn't need to be a rule as far as I'm concerned. But the fact that there is one,
yeah,
and that it seemingly was violated. And, Dave, as Tony and I have been saying all week, we don't even think it's about that as much as it is about Brady not turning over the cell phone records that they wanted. And this red herring, you know, people are throwing out there about, oh, well, he's got private communications. They didn't want any of that. They wanted a very specific set of communications, and they said they'd let his team of lawyers, agent, whatever, vet them, and they would take their word for it that they were handing them over the stuff, and he still refused to comply on that score, on that and the fact that the Patriots didn't provide the equipment manager for a second interview. And they said there wasn't a compelling reason to do that. Whatever the reason, I think the lack of full cooperation is really the big thing that they're getting hammered for right now.
Absolutely. I mean, just to go back to your point about why is that a rule, if it wasn't a rule, then I don't think it should be that big a deal either, you know, because as long as we're playing with the same football, if you got a little bit less PSI, you know, that helps you grip the ball a little bit better and throw the ball a little better. It's you can still have fumbles, you know.
Sure, you can still.
And look, every team can do it now.
Don't we want an offensive game? Isn't everything done to enhance the offense seemingly right?
Yes.
So if the quarterback and therefore the skill guys as well are going to have a better time hanging on to the football, okay.
Why not?
Maybe
it didn't hurt the game. Yeah,
game, right. So
yeah.
There
is a rule, and you have to stay within the rule. And just the fact that I was saying this to you guys earlier, just the fact that there's communication between him and the the locker room attendant, whoever, just the fact that they have communicated through text, all that kind of stuff. He definitely was involved. I know. Not for a fact, but I know that he was involved because as a quarterback, you're handed the balls each week.
What day do they bring them to you? Like Thursday?
Like Thursday, yeah. Okay. They bring them in. They say, hey, here's the balls for this week. You know, we're gonna go through Friday practice with them just so we can break them in a little bit for you as long as it's not raining, that kind of stuff. Tell me what you think. They would hand the balls to me. I'd feel them real quick and then toss them right back in the back.
What are you looking for? What were you looking for when you'd handle
those? Well, for my thing, I just didn't want them to be super slick. So you get them out the box, they come out super slick. I mean, you barely can even hold on to them. So there are things within the rules that they can do to, you know, take off some of that film that's on top of them so that they're not that slick. You can go out and throw them around. You can throw them in the grass a little bit. That also kind of gets it off. So that's why you go out a few days early and work with the footballs. I never thought about this ball has too much air, that kind of stuff. If I did say something about it, I would say, can you take some of the air out of this ball? Is it, you know, is there, you know, I don't know what the number is.
Right.
And they would say, yeah, you know, this one is a little bit pumped up, a little bit too much. So then maybe they would do it. I never really even thought about that. They'd throw me the balls. I'd, you know, just get my hands on them real quick, toss them back and say they're great, you know. But I know that I've been around other quarterbacks that have, I mean, they want to put the ball in their locker for a few days. They want to make sure that, you know, they really get their hands on them. They want to go in and test the PSIs themselves, all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, dude, it's a football. Everybody's got the same football out there. And that was my mindset, that we all had the same football. We all had the same amount of, you know, air in them. So let's just go play ball. I don't care. You know, let's go play ball. But like I said, there's some guys that worry, think about it to ends about this has too much. I need a little less off, all that kind of stuff.
The thing that came out yesterday, guys, is obviously Roger Goodell, we found out, is going to preside over this as the CBA calls for, that he will preside over the appeal.
Yep.
Find it comical that Robert Kraft and the Patriots are suggesting that he cannot be a neutral arbiter, which is, I believe, exactly what the players have been complaining about since they agreed to let him be the neutral arbiter, by the way, under the new CBA. That's always their contention. Why is this guy in charge of sentencing and in charge of the appeal process? In this instance, he isn't in charge of sentencing. He wasn't in charge of the sentencing, but he will handle the appeal. And they're saying if he feels the evidence is strong enough, why wouldn't he put it in front of an independent person? So Robert Kraft is challenging Goodell's independence to act because now it doesn't benefit him. And I just find it comical that the owners are in solidarity when it's an owner versus player issue.
Oh, yeah.
That this is the way it's going to go. And now Kraft, 1 week after saying we will accept the findings of the Wells report, oh, but we didn't think they'd go against us. Oh, now that they're against us, well, now we may sue the league. We may, you know, we're going to publicly try to put pressure on Roger Goodell to recuse himself. And they can't. I mean, they can publicly try, but a clear reading of the collective bargaining agreement gives him the authority to preside over this. I read Lester Munson's piece on ESPN.com, their legal analyst, and he basically said, look, there's almost zero chance that this penalty gets reduced because everyone's suggesting, and I think this is more trial balloons from the league. They put out, here's the Wells report, all these stories about possible punishments ranging up to a full year suspension. They take the temperature of the public. They give a four-game suspension, and now I think they're, again, floating trial balloons. Should it be reduced? Is it about right? There's a poll that's indicated about two-thirds of fans think it's that it was satisfactory, that it was four or more games. And in the end, I think as we get closer to this actually playing out, I don't think it's going to be reduced. And if it is, I don't think it's going to be reduced by much.
Well, this is actually the first time that I'm happy to see Goodell do something like
this.
Are
you? I bet a lot. Do you think a lot of players feel this way?
I think so. And it's, you know, I'm not saying that because I, you know, I hate seeing another player go through something like this. But, you know, honestly, he put himself in this situation. But just the fact that he didn't say, yeah, I'll let somebody else handle it because it's my boy Kraft and I want, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's a part of, you know, bringing them down or not bringing them down, but just, you know, causing this to go on. So the fact that he said, you know what, I'm going to still stick in there and I'm going to be the guy that oversees it and you guys are going to have to try to come through me to get this thing reduced. So this is the first time I'm actually happy to see him go through something.
Kind of like a taste of their own medicine.
Exactly.
It's got to feel like for
you,
I believe.
And absolutely.
I'm sure you're not the only player who feels that way, although ultimately it's a player in Tom Brady that it affects, but it's the team owner who has stepped out to talk about how dissatisfied he is with the findings
and
the process.
And then a lot of this, too, is just the Patriots, period. You know, just all their different things that they've been caught or talked about cheating in. This is, I think, just a way to get at them for all the different things.
You say, like, there's a sense
Spygate
and the telecommunications.
The number one thing is the telecommunications. It is well known. It's not just a joke. It is well known that when you play them, your headsets are going to go out.
Yeah.
Every time.
Carlos Dansby said that yesterday, talking about the game where the Cardinals ended up going to the Super Bowl that year and played Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And the Patriots blew them out like 50-something to 17 or whatever.
Yeah.
And Dansby said the whole game, we come over the sideline.
Every game. Why in Massachusetts? Why do the headphones, the headsets not work there, but they work in all the other stadiums? I don't understand that.
It's a mystery, Dave.
Must
be something to do with the atmosphere.
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
This date in football history, the Honda driver around the NFL coming straight ahead. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Jaguars Today continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Quite the birthday date. They're not all equal of stature, but I'll start with the notable in 1968. Leroy Horde, Tony, in the late 90s. You know what he was? He was a touchdown vulture is what he was up in Minnesota. Turns 47 years old today, made one Pro Bowl in his career. All-time leading rusher, Emmitt Smith, celebrating his 46th birthday today. 8 Pro Bowls for Emmitt. 4 times a first-team All-Pro, and of course, as we said, more rushing yards than anyone in professional football history. 1970, Desmond Howard, born on this date. He turns 45 today, as does Rod Smith, who could have won Super Bowl MVP one of those years that the Broncos won back-to-back. 2-time Super Bowl champ, 3-time Pro Bowler as well. And numbers, again, I brought this guy up over the years. When you make the case for Jimmy Smith to go into the Hall of Fame, look at Rod Smith's numbers. Maybe not as flashy as Jimmy, but very comparable, and he's got the 2 rings. I think Rod Smith's getting in, and I think, you know, therefore Jimmy Smith, not that many people think it'll happen, but even a longer climb to me. 1975, Ray Lewis, born on this date. 13 Pro Bowls, 7-time first-team All-Pro, 2-time Super Bowl champ, and noted justice obstructor as well. And just to cap it off, oh, boy, do you think the Colts wish they had this pick back? Born in 1976, they could have had Ryan Leaf, 38 years young today. Instead, they settled for Peyton Manning. And, boy, I'm sure they're kicking themselves now after all these years. So a bunch of birthdays on this date in football history, including Emmitt Smith and Ray Lewis. It's presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Call 620-9225 if you're in the market for a family dentist or you need cosmetic work done, or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Yeah, that weighted career value statistic, whatever the heck it is, on the Pro Football Reference page actually has Ray Lewis as the greatest player of all time. He has the highest career whatever number that happens to mean of all time. All first-degree murder convictions in the state of Massachusetts are automatically appealed, so there's no surprise that Aaron Hernandez's murder conviction has been. The paperwork for that appeal says that the conviction was based on, quote, improper speculation, conjecture, and guesswork. It goes on to say that no reasonable jury would have found Hernandez guilty. I hope the juries that found him guilty realize they are unreasonable people. Hernandez was indicted by a grand jury earlier this week for witness intimidation and is still awaiting trial for a double murder in Boston in 2012. Adam Kaplan from ESPN shared a conversation he recently had with Tennessee Titans quarterback Zach Mettenberger, who was responding publicly for the first time since the team drafted Marcus Mariota with the second overall pick in last month's NFL draft. Said Mettenberger, quote, I don't know what the mindset is, but at the end of the day, I can just control what I do, and I'm extremely confident in myself almost to a fault. But people who know me know I'm not going down without a fight to the death for that position.
I will straight up kill you, Marcus Mariota.
Watch your back.
Apparently so.
Fight to the death.
Fight to the death. A cage match. By the way, Emmett and Ray Lewis, that's a pretty good combo in terms of accomplishment, right? Being born on the same day. Arguably the greatest running back. And I know a lot of people say, wait a minute, what about – all right, I said arguably. He's in the conversation. Ray Lewis, certainly arguably the greatest linebacker to ever play, although people will say, hey, what about Lawrence Taylor? I'm not saying he is clear-cut the greatest. They're both in the conversation at their position. Which pair of athletes – how would you rank these three pair of athletes that each pair shares a birthday? You've got Emmett and Ray Lewis. You've got Tiger Woods and LeBron James, right? You've got Michael Jordan and Jim Brown, who all share
Jordan
birthday. Isn't that crazy, though?
That is crazy.
I mean, all right, so Jordan, I mean, arguably got the greatest guy who ever played in both sports, right? And Jim Brown and Michael Jordan. You can argue that LeBron is the greatest in his sport, not the most accomplished. Hey, everyone points to Jordan's got six rings. Bill Russell's got like 11, okay? Yeah. So it's not just rings. And, you know, in terms of a package of talent, he's clearly a top 10 player. Tiger, number one or number two on everybody's list. So either way, those are pretty coincidental happenings, huh?
That is, and I would think I'd almost lean Tiger LeBron. I grew up watching Jordan, and yeah, I just think LeBron has the ability to get those rings. But he's also great too. I mean,
who's getting it this year, by the way?
I mean,
you think it's Golden State?
No, I'm a LeBron fan, so, you see me coming here with my Cavs hat and my shirt on. I just think the way that if he wants to take over the game, I think he's finally figured out that he can do that. And just seeing last night how his the guys around him picked up the pieces and you know, Kyrie went out and now you have Dellavedova come in and you're like, who is this guy? But he ends up the leading scorer in the game. I mean, I just think Golden State shoots too much to have to win. They do have some great players. I mean, Steph Curry is ridiculous.
Phenomenal.
He is ridiculous. He's that guy in the playground on the basketball court that just throws the ball up, and you're like, dude, what are you doing? But they all go in, and he has handles, and he can pass. So, I mean, it'd be a great matchup. I hope that's the matchup because I definitely want to see that one.
Yeah. Right now you got to think the Clippers are on the ropes after last night too. So they're screaming right now. This is not Jaguar football talk, David.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Let's see. Let's go to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line for a few communiques that we've gotten in here. Let's see. What do we have here? Romo fumbled the field goal snap versus the Seahawks. The ball looked like a brand-new ball, shiny and right out of the box. Game balls being doctored for years, cheating to gain an advantage. The Patriots are just mad because they got caught. And we hear that everyone's doing it. It's widespread. It's happening. And people say they point to Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers says he likes his ball a little overinflated, right? Well, that means Rodgers a cheater. That means this. I mean, look, overinflated maybe compared to if you got a 12.5 to 13.5 PSI range, maybe the guys were bringing Rodgers 13 PSI balls. He wanted them at 13.5. I think it's some of that's overblown. The question is it as widespread as it's made out to be, Dave? And it's much like when Jerry Rice talked about this. He said, hey, I used Stick'Em long after they outlawed Stick'Em. Everybody was doing it. Then all of a sudden, wait a minute, Mike Orvin's like, I wasn't doing it. Chris Carr's like, I wasn't doing it. Don't lump me in with your everybody. So I think people sometimes want to say, well, everybody's cheating, so it doesn't matter. Do you feel it's that widespread? I mean, were there always advantages people were looking to gain, even if it meant going above and beyond the boundary of the rules?
Well, everybody's not cheating. I don't say that. I wouldn't lump everybody into these things. Everybody's trying to get some kind of, not even everybody. There are people that want to have some advantage, whatever it is. Usually try to do it within the rules. Some people definitely do more than they should.
What's the worst case of what you've ever seen or you can recall? You don't have to put a name if you don't want.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I've never really seen somebody blatantly doing anything that helped them cheat. Honestly, I want to say maybe in college guys would put a little Vaseline on the jerseys to make them a little bit slicker, that kind of stuff. But, I mean, that honestly was the worst thing that I'd ever really seen. I mean, we were, from my knowledge, from what I saw in our locker room, everybody, you know, got dressed, got ready, went out there and played the game.
Is there anything you suspected, though, from other teams other than, like, as you said, every time you went to New England, it didn't seem to matter who was playing quarterback. The headsets would go out. Was there something that you know, you guys talked about, like this player or this team did something outside the rules consistently and the rest just weren't catching them?
No, other than just being either a dirty player or somebody that took it too far, that, you know, always played past the whistle, like a Richie Incognito, that kind of guy. But those were just – those were more physical plays. Those were more things that, you know, maybe he was holding a little bit more off and that kind of stuff. Never anybody doing anything to the balls or – no, I just never saw anything, never heard of anything. There was never anything that came across like a memo to the team, be on the lookout for this type of stuff. Never really anything like that.
Holding is never acceptable unless a quarterback's making a fourth down run.
Absolutely.
In Pittsburgh.
And that was just a great physical play.
I thought Meester just redirected.
Khalif Barnes.
All of them.
All of them, absolutely.
A lot of them.
I think it's the way I ran through the hole that made it look like they were being held. My speed through
right.
the hole. Like,
no way
he hit the hole that fast.
Exactly.
You know, so there's had to be some holding there.
Tyler passes this along. This is one reported by Albert Breer. The NFLPA, Jeffrey Kessler, on behalf of the NFLPA, is contending that they intend to call Roger Goodell as a witness during the appeal, and therefore he cannot serve as the arbitrator of the appeal. That's pretty sneaky, but hey, maybe it'll work. I don't know. I don't know what you...
Maybe it's done with all within the rules. Was it cheating?
I don't know. I mean, look, what would the grounds be to call Roger Goodell as a witness? Hey, we think you have it in for us, and we want to cross-examine you on that.
Right.
I mean, I guess there's probably some grounds that they can come up with. I mean, if they want to contend.
If they're trying to call into question the validity of the Ted Wells report, perhaps, maybe since Goodell is the one who's hiring him to do it. Look, I don't know. The mudslinging continues.
It's terrible.
It really is kind of fun because your team's not involved in it, and it's the team that has had the most success. So a lot of people, and, you know, like you said, Spygate, doctoring with the, you know, the helmet, the communication system, and now this. People felt like the Patriots have been on the borderline, if not outright cheating, for years. And so there's a lot of... comeuppance.
Can you imagine?
I love how all this is going on because it's the Patriots, because it's Tom Brady, Kraft. I love how all this is that much of a big deal now. You know, when you have other players that have things that happen to them, you don't get this all this swirling news and frenzy. And we've got, you know, we're going to bring Roger Goodell in as, you know, it is a lot. I understand why, of course. But, I mean, it just –
well, it depends on the story and the circumstance. I mean, clearly, deflating balls is not on a moral scale equivalent to punching your girlfriend in the face in an elevator, you know, or anywhere else for that matter. But, you know, you had Bounty Gate.
I was going to say that was pretty close. But you didn't hear of what's the linebacker that went to
– Vilma.
Vilma. You might have heard a little bit about it, but it wasn't swirling. It wasn't all that. And he –
He's a good player, but he's not quite the stature.
That's what I'm saying,
Brady.
Yeah.
Right.
So you don't hear it as much.
No, I mean, look, it's been – we should all feel ridiculous. I mean, we've been talking about deflated footballs in the National Football League now for 3 months, and we should all feel ridiculous. And it's amazing to me that just when I think, well, it can't get any more absurdist than what it's been, then a lawyer being paid by the New England Patriots writes in a document just in the last 36 hours that he calls himself the deflator because he's losing weight. How stupid does he have to feel even writing that? That's how absurd this thing has gotten.
That's when you, like, you could have edited yourself and you would have been a lot better off.
Right.
Right.
It's just like that's the point we've gotten to with this thing, though, that it's so absurd that a professional lawyer is writing something like that to defend his client.
But if they don't deal with that specific nickname, I mean,
they have to.
They have to come up, no matter how ridiculous sounding it is. They had to give some. Otherwise, everyone's just going to say, yeah, but why did he call himself the deflator? He's clearly deflating football, so they had to put up something, no matter how ridiculous it sounds. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in, and keep them coming on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Question of the day asking you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a commissioner do you think Roger Goodell is for the National Football League with all that has gone on in his tenure? We'll get to those thoughts coming up in a little bit. More news from around the National Football League as well. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday, live from Everbank Field, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, if you'd like to get on board, 641-1010, the way to do it, both on the phone lines in the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. I've been thinking about revamping the Friday Top 5, maybe doing Tyler's Top 5 texts of the week, something like that, where he pulls them out versus out of all the ones you send us while we're on the air. So something to think about. I don't know if there would be a prize attached to it. Typically that incentivizes people, but who knows. Quickly, Dave, before we go to the phones, Tony and I talked yesterday about the competition committee is going to hear some proposals to alter the extra point, as has been talked about for the last year plus. The three proposals basically all center on moving the PAT snap back to the 15-yard line, which would make it a 33-yard field goal. Two of the proposals, defense would be able to score on, say, a blocked kick or a stop two-point conversion, take it back for two of their own. And the difference between those proposals, one of them says let's leave the two-point conversion at the two. The other one says let's move it up to the one. So it's a real risk-reward. Now you got a better chance to make it. Do you go for it more? Just in general, do you? You know, I hear some people say it's supposed to be automatic. I don't know if it is supposed to be automatic, but it has become automatic. Are you in favor of tinkering with it, or do you say leave well enough alone?
No, I honestly say I don't even know why we have it. If it's so automatic, then what's the point of it? You know, it doesn't provide any kind of thrill or anything. You just know it's going to go through. But if you do move it back, now it does add a little bit of theater to it. You know, now that you do have a chance of missing it, you do have a chance. Maybe you need that 1 point to win or tie the game, and there is something behind it. If it's still up there at its normal spot, you're just like, well, we're going in overtime. All you have to do is kick the ball through the uprights, you know. So definitely adding something to it to make it that much more, or just not even having that part. I mean, now you're taking, you know.
That's my bathroom
you're,
break.
You're taking the kicker's job out of it, but, you know.
Scobie's not happy.
He's not. Right. Move Josh. It back. Give them, you know, a little something more to go after.
You see, and that's one way of looking at it, that it puts more of a premium on the good kickers. If you move it back, not everybody, you know, everybody can make that extra point.
Yep.
This becomes, not everyone's going to have the same percentage from 33 yards. Tony, how many kickers did you say yesterday had 10 or more attempts in the 30 to 39-yard range?
Yeah, it was just the kickers with 10 or more attempts, but it was 14, I think, kickers had it, and three of them had made all the attempts from that kind of range.
So
now,
no,
again, we
right.
talked about it. You're going to different hash marks, that kind of thing, so the conditions are a little bit different. I need to look up the numbers from last year with that experiment, how many extra points were actually missed when they were playing around with this in the preseason.
They did
last
like 2 weeks of it in the preseason,
yeah.
Right? We'll see if we can dig that up. Let's get to the phones. 641-1010. James, you're next up today on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
I was just saying, I thought it might be interesting if they made every extra point type of drop kick instead of just the regular traditional kick. And then even if it was, like, different and they just got rid of the kick, at the end of the game it was more of a shootout instead of just after every touchdown. It's just, you know, a free kick, essentially, so.
All right. Well, I don't think they'll go either one of those directions. I certainly don't think they'd go the shootout.
I love the drop
direction.
Kick.
was Flutie the last one to do a drop kick in the NFL?
Yeah.
But he made it.
He made
it.
Didn't somebody else try it? Was it Ocho? Did he try the – or did he just try
I think he just might have tried an extra point. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Something like that. There was – who was the offensive lineman in Tampa that tried
that.
The extra point?
Because of an injury, right?
Was it?
Yeah, I thought it was because of an injury in the game to the kicker.
I do remember something, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. I'll look that up when I get a chance.
Or the kickoff. Was it a kick or a kickoff? I can't remember.
No, it was an extra point. I'm pretty sure I remember a big defensive lineman attempting and maybe making an extra point for the Bucs. This is a while back now. Or at least it's going
there
back
definitely should
bit.
Be something to add a little bit more drama to it. Something that's just automatic, like you say. What's the point? There's no point. You're just bringing the guys back out there for something that is automatic.
And I think, too, if you want to encourage – I like the idea of encouraging the two-point conversion more.
Yeah.
Because it creates
– you want to see more of an offensive play than just kicking the ball.
Yeah, and it creates more scenarios, creates more strategy and tactics that go into it. And especially I think they've – and now I don't believe these proposals have included this, but if you were to – use the hash marks and treat it like a field goal instead of an extra point. In other words, wherever you scored the touchdown, people have said, whatever point you cross the goal line, that's it will be moved in to that, you know, as close to the hash mark. If you run right up the sideline, it'd go to the far right hash mark or far left hash mark. And if you scored between the hash marks, they'd do their best to kind of line it up with that. That would be an interesting take on it, too. And it would be interesting to see how, if at all, it changed team strategy. So you think about it, you're at the goal line. You're going to throw a fade to the corner of the end zone and have to kick from the hash to tie the game for 33 yards if it's windy and snowing out, or are you just going to maybe throw one more quarterback sneak out of the playbook? You know what I mean?
Now, if you go for the two-point conversion, does that the ball is also going to be lined up where they're saying where you scored the touchdown?
They're saying
because that changes the way an offense – will attack it. They always
certainly
will try to go with the same formation to that side because they usually can say which hash they want the ball on, all those kind of things.
Yeah, none of these proposals, I think, alter it right now. I think right now they're trying to say, let's take it one step at a time.
Yeah.
Let's move it back to the 15, and then I would be in favor of Philadelphia's proposal to move it to the one-yard line. Really make it an incentive.
I like that, too.
Let's go for it. I mean, a quarterback sneak can score you two. Do we take that chance? Do we want to get our quarterback hit? Do we want to run a dive play? Do we want to do a number of different things? And, you know, Chip Kelly's the one who proposed this. They always went for two on the first touchdown at Oregon, and he's one of the bigger gamblers out there. So I know he's thinking from his own team's perspective of what he'd like to do, but I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see, you know, more teams, hey, you score, you go for two, it's 8-0, and it's midway through the first quarter. The other team scores. Are they chasing that two-point conversion right away, or are they just going to settle and play their game? I think it puts a little more pressure on some of these coaches out there.
By the way, 8 missed extra points last year through the first 2 weeks of the preseason when they were going through that, which is a conversion rate of 94%. The NFL in the 2013 regular season missed 5 extra points all year. So the number went to 8 in those first 2 weeks. I'm not sure if that's enough that the NFL is going to change what that play is going to be. They also played around in the Pro Bowl. We were out there for that where they narrowed the goalpost for the one game for the Pro Bowl as well. So, look, the NFL is going to do something with this. At some point, the way extra points or field goals are being kicked, it's going to change. We're just not sure exactly how at this point in time.
All right. I swear to you I had this in my head, and it wasn't a defensive lineman, but I didn't want to say it until I looked it up. The guy who kicked the extra point for the Bucs was an offensive lineman. It was George Yarnough, the Jags' offensive line coach, and until obviously battling his health issues last year. So it was George Yarnough who came in and kicked an extra point for the Tampa Bay Bucs. So just kind of an odd situation. He kicked an extra point in the closing moments of the 1983 season at Detroit on December 18th at the Pontiac Silverdome. He was the team's emergency kicker. He was a straight-on left-footed kicker, and he entered the game with down by 4 points. John McKay had removed the newly signed place kicker, barefooted Dave Warnke, after two consecutive poor kicks, a failed extra point late in the first half, and an unattractive low-spinning field goal attempt in the third quarter from 29 yards when the score was tied at 13. So basically,
there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. McKay had seen enough.
What year is this?
Like, this is 83 season.
You had a barefooted kicker being removed from the game so that a straight-laced, left-footed offensive guard can kick a field. That is a lot going on. Hello, Tampa.
He missed a spinner from 29 and an ugly extra point attempt, a failed extra point attempt.
Maybe that's what they should do. They should tell the kickers they got to go barefoot.
I don't know. Well, a bunch of them used to. Nobody goes barefoot anymore. Why did they go barefoot?
I don't understand that.
How could that have been better then?
Maybe they weren't allowed to wear like a soccer cleat or something like that if they wanted to. They had to wear football
cleats. They
like
to feel their toe on the ball.
Yeah.
No way. Break your toe, man. That's why I tell all my soccer kids anyway. Don't kick the ball with your toe. Although it does feel good when you nail one right in the middle with your toe. Got to admit, I know why they do it. All right, so George Yarno was that guy. I hope George is doing well. We should get an update on him and see how that's going. Of course, Doug Marrone coming in. We talked about this last week about the kind of under-the-radar additions. Who's the best kind of unsung guy or under-the-radar pickup that the Jags have made this offseason? And a lot of people said that they thought Doug Marrone coming in to coach the offensive line with what he's got. I mean, how many times last year, Dave, did we just sit here and say, unless that line gets better, nothing. You're not going to be able to know if Blake's any good. You're not going to know if any of these guys are any good. So he comes in, and as we talked about early on, possibly with as many as three new starters, there's certainly a lot more raw material to work with.
Absolutely. You know, if he's a great communicator and a great teacher, and he can make these guys better than they actually really are, then that's what you want. And then they've added some more pieces to push guys to hopefully improve the offensive line. I definitely think that's going to be a great move, because if you're a quarterback and you can stand back there and just pick guys apart because you know you're not going to get touched, then you're automatically going to be a much better quarterback.
Let's hope so, man. Let's hope so. OTA start, what, a week from Tuesday,
yeah,
right?
26.
Coming up on the 26th. So we get a chance to get a look at all these guys in action together for the first time in about a week and a half. All right, coming up, a fan feedback spotlight question of the day asks you about Roger Goodell. How do you feel about Roger Goodell? At times, I think there are things that Roger Goodell has done very well. At times, I think he's a guy that is an embarrassment, quite frankly, at moments to the league. And so probably the final answer may lie, for me, somewhere in between. But on a scale of 1 to 10, we ask you today, tell us how good of a commissioner Roger Goodell is for the National Football League, and give us your reasoning why, if you have time or space to fill that in 140 characters or less, if you tweet us, at MD_1010XL, at David Garrard 9, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Also on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We'll be back with the fan feedback spotlight. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Jaguars Today continues live from EverBank in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We need a webcam right now, Tony.
That's a good beat right there.
You are deep into it, too. You're enjoying every nuance of that beat right there. David Garrard is grooving in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. You're not going to need some orthopedic help after that, are you?
I might.
You good? You lose. By the way, give us the update. What's cooking at Retro Fitness, man? I know
Bay Meadows
been going well.
Southside, still up and running, going good. Harbor Village. Everything's rocking over there. We're excited. All the best equipment in town, best staff, best personal trainers. We're looking for number 3 right now.
Already, man.
We're trying to make a big impact here in the city.
It appears so. How about getting down St. Augustine way? Hook a brother
that
up.
That might be 4 or 5.
All right. Somewhere further down the
yes,
line.
Yes, absolutely.
Corner of the Duval Market first.
There you go.
I gotcha. $19.99 a month, and that's where things start. And
that's the base package, and then you can go up to $29.99. That's VIP. That gets you the classes for cycling and boot camps, also tanning, and also our kids' playroom.
RetroFitness.com. Check it out. David Garrard, entrepreneur, newly retired David Garrard, by the way, in case you missed that one. All right, today, fan feedback spotlight Roger Goodell is an interesting figure. Has been controversial for a variety of reasons. Certainly, he's been controversial with the players for a long time. Long time. Number of years. And that they just feel that he's too dictatorial. He's got too much control. He's the final arbiter. But I always, on the other hand, like to point out that they signed off on that with the collective bargaining agreement. And, you know, you got to give something to get something. And they didn't give enough or prioritize that aspect of it enough. You have a feeling they're trying to get rid of that in the next round of labor negotiations. But I think they'd like to get rid of that, like, organically. You know, I think they'd like to get to a point, and I think they're probably loving what's going on right now with Robert Kraft getting his back up against Roger Goodell, that will there be a push to expose this process? You know, as Pro Football Talk put it, the blackout rule kind of caved to public pressure. The tax-exempt status of the National Football League went away, even though it was odd. The NFL as an entity wasn't taxed, but all the dollars that were disseminated to the teams in the league were taxed. So it wasn't like that money wasn't being taxed, but because they were set up, public perception, wait a minute, why is the NFL a tax-exempt entity? And it was public pressure that got those things changed. Wasn't any collective bargaining agreement adjustment that had to be done. So I think there's a sense that there's an effort to put enough public pressure on to make it seem like, well, it does seem unreasonable that Roger Goodell could impose discipline and then hear the appeal of that discipline at the same time. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense because you're going to have to call yourself wrong.
Yeah, I wonder how the public can put pressure on you to change that.
I don't know. Just, I mean, look, you see opinion polls come out all the time and word of mouth, and is there going to be an uproar over this? The issue here, I think, for people that would like to see that happen is the public seems to be in line with the punishment that was handed down to Tom Brady. And whether that's out of spite, whether that's out of jealousy, I'm sure there's some of that that goes into it. But whether it's also a feeling of, man, these guys have been doing something shady for years.
Yep.
Nail them as bad as you possibly can. So I think overall, even though I hear a lot of people, and I've heard a lot of hosts on this station, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, say they went way overboard, the numbers don't seem to indicate that in terms of public opinion. And I do think the NFL is very concerned with public opinion.
No, I think they are. And when you look at, I know ESPN did a poll where they were asking about specifically the Tom Brady suspension and if they thought that it was the right suspension. And they left like two areas even for, you know, the fans basically in that, are you an avid NFL fan? So you're going to click in this poll. Or are you just kind of a casual NFL fan, a sports fan, and how do you feel about it? And it was telling, I think, that in that poll, 76% of avid NFL fans thought the suspension was warranted for Tom Brady. 24% said that they thought it was a little bit too much. 0% of avid NFL fans had no opinion on the matter. They were just like, whatever. You know, 0% of avid NFL fans felt that way. And I think that's what you're dealing with right now. When you talk about the NFL fans in general, I think they are for Tom Brady missing time because of what's gone on with this entire situation. They're not like the casual fan. The casual fans, it was 11% were just like, I don't care. You know, one way or the other, this really doesn't matter to me. To NFL fans, apparently, this matters. You know, what happens with Tom Brady matters to the avid NFL fan, and 76% of them, at least on ESPN, are saying, yeah, get him.
At this point in time, I think I said it when it happened, I would be very surprised if he actually missed games. Now that a four-game penalty has been imposed, I don't think they're wiping out the entire suspension. I think he's missing something. The question is, how many is he missing? Will it be reduced at all? If I had to bet one way or the other, I would say no at this moment, that it won't be, that it'll be upheld. Selfishly, would like to see it knocked down to no less than three games because the Jags play him in week three. So, like a lot of people here. But, you know, and meanwhile, all this off-the-field stuff, Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, all these situations that he's handled, some to his credit. I mean, he came in, keep in mind, you know, Pac-Man Jones at the time, he was kind of the poster child for off-the-field stuff, right? It seemed like there was a new story popping up with him all the time, and it just like, how can he keep running afoul of the law and there's really no repercussion? And so I think there was an appetite from fans when Roger Goodell initially took over to say, let's clean up that nonsense. We don't need that nonsense affecting the game we love and hanging over it. And I think inside the league, and I just think at a certain point, a lot of people feel it's just swung too far the other direction.
I think this just puts all the guys that play, it puts them, you know, really in check that you do anything that's going to mess up the shield, mess with the shield, we're going to come get you. If we can do this to Tom Brady and the Patriots, then think about what they can do to everybody else. And I think it just says we're not, you know, going to – just because, you know, Kraft has been my buddy, you know, we're not going to just, you know, slap their hand. We're going to really hit these guys and hit these guys hard because of everything they've done. But then also to let you know that, you know, we mean business. That's what I really think it does. I think for any player that was doing something before and had thoughts of doing something, that they're going to change their mind now and play within the rules.
Obviously, the other end of the spectrum for Goodell is, look at the league. The league is rolling in cash.
Sure.
Right? I mean, they're giving him tens of millions of dollars in bonuses every
and there
year.
Is a difference. This isn't a player conduct thing. This is a rules violation where you feel like it may be affecting the integrity of the outcome of football games.
Yep.
And I think that's why when people want to compare it to Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson and those kinds of things, they're not directly comparable. I agree. You know, what Ray Rice did is way worse than what Tom Brady did, but this is about the integrity of the game on the field. And the commissioner, not only is he employed by the owners, but his other big job is the integrity of the game is at his disposal. He has to protect that at whatever cost he feels necessary. And if he feels like breaking the rules and then not being willing to cooperate when we think we've caught you breaking the rules is a big violation, big enough that it is worth a 4-game suspension and a first and a fourth round pick and $1 million, then I don't disagree with him. But it was the same thing with Bountygate. That's about the integrity of the game of football, where if you're trying to intentionally injure other players on that field, that's about the game of football, which is why he came down as hard as he did. And you notice we haven't heard anything about bounties in the league since that story came out, right? I mean, if he's trying to set a precedent of, we caught you doing this, we know everybody's probably been doing this for 50 years in the game of football, we want it out. And they made an example enough out of them that it stopped, right? You're not hearing about bounties. They may still be going on, but they're doing it quietly now, at least in NFL circles. And that's kind of what this is. This is, we get that there may be a lot of teams that are doctoring footballs. Stop. If we catch you doing it, This is what's going to happen to you. We don't want this around the game.
All right, let's get a quick look, Tony, at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking people on a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a commissioner has Roger Goodell been?
From John David, we got, I'd say, a 5. A product of poor timing, the evolution of the game and society makes it impossible to please everyone. From Nick, an 8. Sure, he messed up with Rice, but it's not like there was an example to follow. Everybody makes mistakes. From AG Jag Fan, 3. He listens to the public but overstepped his CBA constantly. From Demetrius, a 2. Where's Paul Tagliabue when you need him? Goodell's mishap with the personal conduct policy will be his legacy. From Daniel, a 9. Marketing of teams, not stars. The NFL has never been more popular and competitive balance is at its best. From Cristiano, 10. If the Pro Bowl really comes to Brazil, hashtag Jaguars Today correspondent. From Eric, maybe a 4. I don't really know. Been all over the board as commish. Good for owners, bad for players. From Brian, 10. The job of the commissioner is to make the owners richer. He's done that job well, even if he's annoyed fans. And from Irish Jaguar, 5. There's no such thing as a good commissioner, just one that hasn't pissed off your team yet.
Could be. That could be the case. Johnny Crum on Facebook went with 8. View him as the NFL's anti-hero, his lacking character trait being consistency, but overall does what needs to be done. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Joshua Lee Wright says he's a 6 out of 10, done some good things for the league as far as improving safety, attempted to move some of the events around like the draft, etc., but his handling of controversial events and discipline of said events are extremely inconsistent. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Chase Thompson, Bold City Batman, says if he keeps Brady to at least a 3-game suspension, he's a 10. If he reduces it to 2, then I'd say a 1 and we should riot. Hashtag Garoppolo beatdown wanted. Now there's a guy who's thinking. And let's see, Casey went with a 1. He's incompetent, doesn't follow his own policies. And Ian Smith went with a 7. So it, all across the board. You know, you're going to get a variety of opinions. A couple of quick last-minute texts on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. One, texter says ESPN polls are pieces of blank, but he didn't say blank. You can figure that out.
Yep.
To quote them on your show is ridiculous. Why exactly? I don't understand. So ESPN polls are probably taken by avid sports fans who visit their site.
Right.
And that seems to be the audience we're looking at here. And then they're asked, in this case, to identify themselves as what degree of fan they are and how do they feel about it. I don't understand why they're what's wrong with an ESPN poll?
I don't know what's wrong with an ESPN poll.
Is there some known thing where ESPN's been doctoring polls, like the Patriots doctor footballs? Or if not, I really don't know.
I don't know.
And the other question, ask David. So I'm asking you, David, will you be putting on your fishing tournament this year?
I will, and we're working on the date right now.
Do you have a range, an idea of where you'd like to
fall? Yeah, I think we're thinking late July, early August. So that kind of wipes out a lot of offshore fish, but I think the kingfish will be running and inshore fish will be just as good. So that's kind of the
more to come.
Rough draft. Yes,
more to come on
absolutely.
That. We'll have details on Jaguars today. And if David Garrard ever does retire from the fishing tournament business, you'll hear it here first.
Yes.
On Jaguars today.
In the last few minutes of the show.
All right, 2 weeks in, you still haven't seen Age of Ultron.
No, I haven't.
Do we have a timetable?
I blame it on my son.
Now, Tony's giving
he's,
you a...
He's in
a,
school, so it's tough.
Tony's giving you a rousing review of Mad Max.
Oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
Yeah, he did.
So what comes first now, Mad Max or
well, I'll go see Mad Max on my own.
Yeah, don't take the kid to Mad Max.
And that's the thing. No, I don't. Definitely won't. And he's like, Dad, I want to go see that. I'm like, no. He's like, I love all the explosions. I'm like, no. It's way more in there.
There's more than the
way
explosions.
Way more than the explosions.
Yes.
But see, I'm a lunchtime guy. I can't go in the evening. It's
okay.
So that's why
you want to wait for your kid
to
get out of school.
Yeah, I won't be able to enjoy myself.
I liked it a lot. It's just not, you know, it's hard to top the original.
Yeah.
I think.
Usually is.
So usually
it will be topped by Infinity War.
Oh yeah, that's you know, it's a ways to come.
3 years
and Civil
gotta
War.
Wait 3 years.
So, have you seen the character list in Civil War?
Yeah, they're all coming in.
That's
baby.
The third Captain America
man,
movie.
I can't wait to go see that.
Geek Squad in effect
that
right here.
Characters list. Oh my god.
Oh stop it! Stop it with your Flash T-shirt. All right,
Avengers baby.
Don't point the nerd
Flash
finger at me.
Flash is coming.
Don't point the nerd finger at me, pal. Yeah, his Flash is coming. His name's Quicksilver. However. All right, for David Garrard, Dave, great to see you, man. We'll do it again hopefully next week if time permits. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, thanks to Claude Nolan Cadillac. They bring you Jaguars Today every Friday. XL Primetime next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.